All right, welcome along to the Big Red Bench here on Cork's Good Times Red FM. Dan Casey here with you for the next hour. Attention here is swiftly going to turn to Super Value Parky Cueve, where Munster are playing Gloucester in the Champions Cup. With 25 minutes gone, the score is 7-3 in Munster's favour. And to talk about the game, it was a pleasure to welcome Sarah McKenzie Foley into the studio before we hopefully hear from her later on. Right. We're delighted to be joined here on the Big Red Bench by our very own Sarah McKenzie Foley. A big day in store here in Cork down at Super Value Parky Cueve. Now, we're doing this earlier in the day. The game is actually happening at the moment, so hopefully we'll hear from you at halftime a little later on. But what are you expecting from the occasion down at Super Value Parky Cueve today?
Well, I think, first of all, from a fan point of view, there should be a lot of improvements. I think Munster, in fairness to them, went out and specifically asked for feedback on the last couple of games that have been at Parky Cueve. And for anyone, any of us that were there, we can say that it wasn't the best setup. Definitely the addition of the big screen down the city end, I think, is going to be a big help. And I mean, the last time I was there, people around me were actually watching it on their phone on the player because the visibility and everything was so bad. So I think definitely a step up there. I think 40,000 fans in Parky Cueve, like, it's got to be a big occasion. And I think in terms of what to expect from the team, that's definitely a bit tougher to say. Inconsistency has been an issue. It was an issue last year as well. And I think from speaking to Clayton McMillan and also to Tadhg Byrne, the sense that I get from them is that they know there's more in the squad and they are frustrated by the fact that they're not getting it out of themselves. They're having these purple patches in games, but that's not enough. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're not, when you don't have that cohesion going in and you maybe don't have that confidence that you can pull games back, it's really, really hard. You're putting yourself in a very difficult position, and they're definitely feeling that frustration at the minute.
I know it was embarrassing in the Champions Cup last time out, but like, are they second in the URC table? They're not doing too bad. Are they being a bit too hard on themselves, or what's going on there?
It's a good question. I think it's interesting. It was interesting for me being down in Thomond for the game against Stormers, because from the outside looking in, Munster played really well in that first half and then kind of capitulated in the second. But actually, Clayton McMillan even had a couple of bones to pick about the first half. He felt they didn't make the most of the kind of dominance, the yellow card periods, things like that. So I think, again, it comes back to just getting more out of that group of players, because if you look at it on paper, it's a really strong squad, a lot of experience, but also youthful energy. The players are fired up, you know. It's just a case of they're not quite finding that X factor to get the 100% out of themselves.
Have you been impressed by Clayton McMillan's tenure so far, though?
I think it's really hard to say, because I think obviously he's come in off the back of a season where the coaches were, you know, you had Ian Costello who was kind of leading the charge, and then the coaches that had remained kind of in a group with him. And then I suppose when you come in as a head coach, you're establishing a new dynamic. I think the players seem to be happy, and you know, they seem to be kind of behind his ethos, which is good. And I think he's going to be very critical. He's going to really demand the very, very best, and I think that's absolutely what a club like Munster needs. People expect an awful lot from this Munster team, as they always will, and I think that that's exactly the expectation that he's putting on himself and on the players as well.
We'll move on to the teams in a minute, but as a venue, what for rugby game, what do you think of Super Value Parky Cueve? Do you think they will change those things around today? And even getting there, I know, can be a bit difficult though for fans.
Yeah, I think getting there is definitely tricky. I don't know if there's much that could be done on the Munster side about that. I think where they've definitely, as I say, put effort in is with the screens, you know, making sure that fans are getting a general and overall better experience. The atmosphere in the two games that I was there was fantastic. It was really, you could see people loved it. I was actually in town this morning and people were even already walking around in their Munster jerseys. Like, it's, people love watching Munster play in Cork. And I think whether, obviously, the restrictions around the size of Virgin Media Park means that we do have to look to bigger grounds every so often. And I think that's no harm, because unfortunately the numbers in Thomond haven't been as strong as maybe we would have liked. And I think there's no harm then in looking outside of Limerick. I mean, Munster is a huge province, and there's a really strong support for Munster rugby across the province, so I think it's no harm to spread the games out.
Do you think this is going to be the start of it? I know the Limerick crowd aren't too happy, but sure, they're never happy with Cork at the moment anyway. Jealousy is an awful disease for them.
I think it's less about that, and I think it's more about what I was saying there in terms of looking at Munster as a whole. And it's different for, you know, your other three provinces. I think we have that ability to do the games in both places. And as I say, the atmosphere always delivers. So if the fans are getting a good experience, if it's helping the players to unlock that extra, you know, 5-10%, whatever, as far as I'm concerned, that's a good thing. You want them to be winning wherever they're.
Craig Casey's contract renewal during the week. How big of a deal is that going to be for Munster?
I think it's really important. I was delighted to see that. I think he's already a really strong character within the group, and I think part of that comes with the position that he's playing, but also just his own personality. He's always really fired up, and I think he's able to unlock that out of players around him as well, which is brilliant, and especially in times like this. You need that passion, like that is very Munster, and I think that he embodies that definitely. And I also think, you know, we've seen it with Ireland as well. When he's fit, he's an extremely impactful player, and he can make life really hard for opposition teams, and that's exactly what we need. So yeah, I was really thrilled to see he's going to be there for at least another 2 years.
Big day for two Cork lads. We'll start maybe with Ben O'Connor. A huge day for him in a Munster jersey.
Yeah, I think there's been a really nice amount of, you know, even though maybe games haven't been won as comfortably, there's a really nice level of players being introduced from either academy or from, you know, the AIL. They're really looking to reward players for playing high quality rugby and bring them into the senior setup, and I think that's fantastic. We need to be doing that all the time, because as we've seen with other teams, you might have a really strong experienced team for a couple of years, but eventually players will age out, and you do always need to be looking to the future. And I think that, you know, Edward Odogbo was another really good example. I think these young players, Tom Ahern, they're all absolutely vital for not only the future, but the present of this team. And it's great to see them getting their kind of, I know it's Saturday, but Friday Night Lights kind of moments. Yeah. That's really important, I think.
Sure, a dog ball get a great reception if he comes on, but a man who definitely will get a great reception is, of course, our very own Jack Rowley. A big impact from him today, hopefully.
Fingers crossed, yeah. I think Jack's playmaking has been really strong lately, and certainly down in Thomond Park, he was very fired up. Got a few comments from the crowd about Sam Prendergast, and I think he kind of, that set him off, and he was ferocious in attack and defence that day, and I think maybe the last bit for him is that clinical piece. You know, his goal kicking, I think he'd like that to, his percentages to be up a bit higher. And I think also just, I think he just needs to continue, I think, bringing his team around him, because he's so creative, and then he'll turn around and be so strong in defence, and that's exactly what you want from your 10. You want them to be able to be strong both sides of the ball, and I think he just needs to keep building on that, and fingers crossed, as you say, he'll get a good reception out there this evening.
I mean, to be fair to him, he's only had a game or two as far as I know, but Alatoa from Leinster, what have you made of him?
Yeah, I think it's hard to say. I think in general the response has been positive from the little bit that we have seen. I think on paper, certainly, he should be a really good addition. Obviously the scrum has been a problem area for not just Munster but for Ireland. You know, it was uncomfortable in Thomond Park, that scrum being dismantled, and I know it was against the South African team, so it's always going to be really, really hard. But I think those are the teams, that the world class teams that Munster need to be pitting themselves against. They need to be aiming for that. So I think the addition of Alatoa is a sign that they're taking that very, very seriously. And equally, the scrum is such a topic of conversation at the minute, and it's something that if you don't have a stable scrum, or if you are finding it impossible to get off the ground in that area, it's really, really hard to build your game if you're lacking in set piece. And they just need that bit of confidence, that bit of consistency back in that set piece. And I think that would be a massive, massive benefit for them. It's going to be essential, really.
Looking at our opponents, Gloucester, what challenges are they going to bring to the table?
It's a little bit hard to say. I definitely think they're going to be unafraid. I think, you know, while we're hyping up the occasion and everything like that, for them, it just has to be almost, for them, it's almost, yeah, we're going to come and we're going to kind of upset the party, really. And I think they have the ability to do that. I think especially if they're watching, you know, they're watching the inconsistency in the last while with Munster, they'll be thinking we can capitalise on that, and they'll be looking for any little chink in the armour to do that. So all we can do is hope, really, that Munster are able to put their game plan in place and not be beaten to the punch, which is a phrase that, when I spoke to Clayton McMillan and Tadhg Byrne after that game against the Stormers in Thomond, that phrase was used a couple of times. And I think certainly when you're at home on an occasion like this, you definitely don't want to be beaten to the punch. So I think a strong start from Munster would be fantastic, and I think putting their game plan on Gloucester rather than sitting back and then, like they did against Bath last week, having to try and come back from a 21 point deficit, that's a massive ask for any team, and we don't know what the conditions are going to be like. So I think it's definitely going to be a big challenge, and hopefully it's one that they're up to facing.
Do you think they will get it over the line?
Yeah, I think they will. I think that this could potentially be a bit of a turning point for them, because we've got this game, we've got obviously the Interpro against Leinster after Christmas, and there's really no let up anymore in rugby this season. It just keeps trundling on, and I think we have to nip the issues that are there in the bud as much as possible. So my hope is that tonight could be a really good opportunity for Munster to do that.
All right, perfect. Have I missed it? And is there anything you want to touch on before we depart ways and you head off?
No, I hope it's a great game. I hope everyone really enjoys it. It should be a fantastic atmosphere. As I say, the last two times I was there, there was a great buzz around the place. So fingers crossed we'll get the same.
All right, well, enjoy the game. Sarah McKenzie Foley, thanks a million for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, with 35 minutes gone in Super Value Parky Cueve, the game remains 7-3, but albeit in Munster's favour. And it's not a great game by all accounts. Sarah McKenzie Foley did text us, and she was saying the game is as dull as dishwater. So if you missed out, you might not be missing much. Hopefully the second half gets a bit better for everyone there, though. We're going to stick with rugby, and we're going to hear the roundup from the Energia AIL results.
Energia AIL updates on the Big Red Bench. With Energia, think of the possibilities.
All right, in Division 1A, fifth place, Cork Conde beat UCD 36 points to 19. In Division 1B, Highfield beat Gary Owen and Woodleigh Park 33 points to 19. And UCC got their win over Naas 34 points to 24. So it was a clean sweep for the Cork sides in that one. We're going to move it on now to a bit of athletics to talk about David Gillick's book. There was only one man for the job, our very own, Joe McCarthy.
No, on Cork's Red FM's Big Red Bench, it is an absolute thrill to have on the line the author of one of the best sports books I've had the privilege of reading this year. It is called The Race, The Inside Track on the Ruthless World of Elite Athletics. It's written by David Gillick, published by Gill Books, and we're delighted to have David here with us on the Big Red Bench. David, you're very welcome. How are you keeping?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on. Yeah, no, it's all go. Look, it's been a bit of a whirlwind over the last, you know, couple of weeks, and indeed kind of, you know, since the book was launched. But delighted that it seems to be going well. People seem to be enjoying it, and the reaction's been really positive. So again, I appreciate the opportunity to come on and talk about it.
Not at all. I was just going to say to you, I remember a long, long time ago when I wrote one of my two books myself, writing it is one thing, promoting it is quite another, Dave. And you've done a fantastic job on that. Can I just ask you about the collaborative effort with Kyle Denny, somebody we've great respect for down this part of the world, a fantastic sports journalist, big athletics man. But how was that dynamic in coming together to get the book written, and how difficult was that?
Yeah, like it's one of the process. Like I was asked to do books over the years. Like I retired initially nearly 13 years ago. So, you know, I was asked then would I do a book, and it was like, no, the head wasn't in it. I wasn't in the headspace. And then, you know, over the last couple of years, a few asks. And then it wasn't really until last year, probably after Paris, where there was just, I just think the interest in athletics was out there. People wanted to know how it operates, how it works, etc. And then, you know, obviously my role in that, from doing all the kind of post-race interviews and stuff like that, that I just felt now's the time to do it. And ironically, I got approached to do it around then, and I said, okay, I'll look into this. And obviously doing it with someone, you know, when that was put for me, I knew straight away. I was like, it's Cahill. And I know Cahill personally. I've covered champs with him. We've roomed together covering champs, trying to save a few bob. And I just knew that this is somebody who gets the sport, knows the sport, and knows a little bit about me. So again, I think the process of sitting there with someone that you're comfortable with, because I knew I was going to have to go back through some tough stuff, you know, and I kind of quickly realized that if I'm going to do this, I want to go all in on it. And I think Cahill was the best person, and you know, he's an incredible journalist himself, and you know, incredible writer, and yeah, he was the best person for the job.
The beauty of the book, as far as I'm concerned, I've read a lot of books this year, and we made it our number one as well in the regional newspaper Southern Star down in West Cork. And the reason we did that, there's a huge amount of good books out of Christmas sports books, as you well know at this stage. Your honesty, Dave, from start to finish. And as you said, you went to areas in your life when it was very difficult. I don't want to get into the nitty gritty, but I do want to just touch on the fact that when you stop being an athlete and you've got to be a civilian again, it is like a lot of professional footballers, you hear quite a lot about it, you hear rugby players now, modern day rugby players, the struggle to understand that what you are and what you've been is no longer what you're going to be. It took you some time to readjust, and Richie Sadler was a big help to you in the middle of all this, we know very well. But look at how far you've come now and look at your career now. But those times were very, very difficult for you.
They were, like, and look, in the book, I go through the highs and the lows, and again, without kind of giving it all away, but I kind of, you know, that was the early part of it, was like, I'm going to go all in. And I even spoke to Richie, and Richie's book's fantastic as well. And, you know, he kind of said, like, you know, if you're going to do it, just tell it how it is. And even when I turned to Charlotte, my wife, and said, I'm going to do a book, she got a head in the hands, was thinking, oh my God, are you serious? And then she was like, well, what are you going to say? And I was like, I'm going to say everything. And she's like, oh God. But I think that was probably the initial hard thing to do, was to kind of go back and start talking about the things that, yeah, look, they caused me a lot of pain and stuff like that, and particularly the aftermath of sport. And it's something that, you know, we're probably still getting used to. When you hear about someone who's retiring and going on, as you kind of termed it, civilian life, the real world, as I put it, you know, it's the trials and tribulations, but also I think the identity crisis that you have of, like, well, for so long I was the runner, and locally, oh, he's the runner, and then suddenly it's all gone. And you kind of, I kind of quickly realized that all my self-worth, confidence, self-belief came from one area of my life, and the minute that was gone, I struggled, you know. And I talk about that in the book, and you're trying to figure yourself out and what you do next. And you know, for me, I was 30, 31, 32, still relatively young, and you're kind of going, well, where do I fit in this world, and what's my purpose and routine and structure? So, you know, that was the hardest part in terms of kind of going back. And you know, even with Charlotte, like, you know, she was with me throughout all those kind of times. And I think that's the thing with sport, and that's the thing with life, you know, whatever walk of life you come from, there's always somebody there who's trying to do that with you. And sport is absolutely no different. They're with you on the highs and they're with you on the lows. And I think sometimes we forget about the fact that whether you play a match and then you go home, win, lose, or draw, there's someone on the receiving end of that. And my sport was no different, and my life after sport was no different, you know. So again, it's about being open and honest. And like, I kind of, one of the key aspects of it was, I kind of want to, like, I hope there's people that might help, get a bit of help from that, you know. And like, been open and honest, and again, been male, we don't really talk about it. We're faster, fitter, stronger, show no weakness, that alpha male syndrome. So I think just by being, as you said, brutally open and honest is the best policy in this situation.
And you were in the book, and you're right, I think I would encourage anybody to buy the book that might necessarily be into athletics. That's the beauty of it, there's so much in this that they can take from it. And I applaud you for being so honest. You mentioned,
well, if I can jump in on that, because that was one of the key things. And even with Cahill, like, you know, I kind of said to him early on, like, I don't want this to be 2008, 2009, 2010. I want it to be like for people who have an interest, maybe a passing interest, or maybe they've suddenly just got an interest in the world of athletics. But whether you're into sport or you're not into sport, I want this to be kind of a read about life, the highs and lows, and particularly the aftermath. So that was one thing. And I think, fairness to Cahill, like, he nailed that in terms of the flow of the book, where you don't get bored by all the nitty gritty, because athletics is very static. So you can very quickly get lost in all the numbers, you know.
No, you've done a fantastic job on that, because the sign of a good read, as I always say, David, from the books I read, are the ones you read quickly because you're going through so fast. So that was definitely true. Charlotte, your wife. Yeah. It's another kind of storyline all the way through this book as well, at different stages, when you met, how you met, how you got together and all that. I don't want to get into that because it's all there in the book. But she's been so important to you. But and what we say down in West Cork as well, or in Cork, David, is she's well able for you. And I think is the other thing I would say. You have a beautiful family. You've come out the other side of athletics. You've started a brand new career in the media. Things are going well. You have a book out. But for your wife, Charlotte, to have been there alongside with you, because she understands the terrain as well, where she came from, her background, she's been hugely important to you.
Yeah, very much so. And I think, like, you know, she ran herself, and that's how we met. And, you know, over in Loughborough, like, she understood what, like, high performance athletics was all about. And even, like, probably the realization through our early years of our kind of relationship, where, yes, look, she realized that maybe she wasn't priority number one. And, like, you know, huge credit for someone to kind of accept that, you know, and accept the life that kind of leads to. Like, I was very intense in what I did. It was my everything. And I think, you know, that was probably one of the key elements, was that, and I kind of touched on it, like, the supportive nature of having someone with you along your career. But also, I can remember kind of, you know, when she read the book before it was published, and she actually turned and goes, "Oh, you're, like, you've been really nice to me in this book." And then I'm thinking, oh my God, like, I must come across like an absolute, you know what. But I think that's just the reality of it. And, you know, she was a constant throughout everything, the highs and lows. And in particular, like, you know, when I retired, you know, she's from England, she moved to Ireland, she probably thought things were probably going to be maybe a little bit different, you know. What did I sign up for, particularly in the aftermath? But, like, I think, you know, where I am now, we've three beautiful kids. You know, she's been massively supportive in terms of the next phase of my life, and allowing me to maybe, you know, yeah, do things that at sometimes she'd be kind of scratching her head, you know. But yeah, but like, that's I suppose the partnership, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
It certainly is. One of the other things, we don't have time to get in depth, but one thing I wanted to touch on, you're moving to the media side of athletics. It's not easy. It's incredibly difficult. There's a lot of time and effort goes in, not just when departed, you see you on screen, but you've become so adept at it. I mean, one of the highlights of the Olympics in 2024 was David Gillick. People were online talking about you, how good you were. I watch you all the time, David, from an interviewing point of view, to pick up things. I'm learning every time I see you do an interview. Gosh. And you have a lovely, easy manner of doing it. But what I wanted to ask you was, because you're in the area just outside the track afterwards, you can't be their friend, even though you might want to be, and you want to put the arm around them. You've got to be the journalist that asks the questions. You've managed to find the balance in that, but is it difficult sometimes?
Yeah, of course it is. Like, you know, athletics is a sport that I love, and I know a lot about, and it can be hard, because I want them all to do well, you know. So, you know, you are a bit of a fan when the race is unfolding, and then you have to quickly kind of put the reporter hat back on and kind of go, right, there's a job to be done here. Like, I think I'm very lucky and I'm very privileged. I think the era that we have right now is fantastic, and we have athletes who are willing to share it all when they come up and talk to me. Now, maybe it's a familiar face, or maybe there's a level of empathy because I've gone through the sport. But I think we're blessed with what we have right now. And I think what's really appealing to me is how the sport is making headlines, front pages, back pages. We've got superstars, and I think that's what every sport needs. And I think right now we're in that golden era. We've got so much talent, and even young talent coming through. But yeah, like, to answer your question, it's hard. You have a job to do in that moment, and that moment comes at you very, very quickly, because they're straight up to you after a race. They probably haven't even comprehended what's just happened in their own head. And, you know, you could be live, as you well know, all of that stuff is going on, and you need to get the story out. So again, it's trying to strike that kind of balance of, you know, when to push and maybe, you know, when to hold back a little bit. I kind of feel in the mix zone, you know, words are like bullets. You know, they're not talking to David here, they're talking to people back home. So you try and just kind of manage that and manage the emotion of it all. And thankfully, the athletes seem to be receptive to that. And I think the other thing we see now is we're seeing fantastic interviews, because they're sharing everything, and that resonates with people back home. You know, sometimes in other sports you get the kind of the party line, they don't really tell you a whole lot, but I think what we have right now in our sport is that they're willing to share, and I think people back home can resonate with the kind of, you know, everything that goes on then on the track.
Very well said, and a lot of that is down to the person doing the interviewing as well, in fairness to you. The race, the inside track on the ruthless world of elite athletics, is written by David Gillick with Cathal Denny. It's published by Gilbert book. It is in all good local bookstores and online. I urge you to go out and get it because it is by far my favourite sports book of 2025. David, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us at the Big Red Bench. Continued success in your career and well done on a fantastic book.
You're very kind, Ger. I appreciate that. Thanks.
Brilliant stuff there from Ger and David. A huge Camogie preview coming in the second half of the Big Red Bench. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Big Red Bench. Dan Casey here with you for the next half hour or so. It's currently Fulham 2, Burnley 1 in the half 5 Premier League game.
Burnley 1, Fulham 2. The home team spirits were lifted when they levelled at the midway point in the half as Josh Cullen expertly played in Leslie Ogechukwu, who from 10 yards controlled with his right foot before steering the ball in low with his left. But at the half hour point, Fulham regained their lead. Burnley failed to clear a corner. Fulham kept the ball alive. Anthony Robinson lofted the ball over the top to the byline. Harry Wilson crossed into the far post area, and there was an unmarked Calvin Bassey to head in his first of the campaign. Burnley 1, Fulham 2.
Let's hear from Shane Pinnington at Anfield now in the game. I'm sure it has a lot more interest over here.
It's finished Liverpool 2, Brighton 0, and after the events of the last week, Mo Salah was back on the pitch and lent his football, this time do the talking, as the Egyptian helped Arne Slot's men move up to 6th in the Premier League table. Hugo Ekitike volleyed the hosts into the lead after just 46 seconds, and a friend headed in a Mo Salah corner in the second half to kill off any Brighton hopes. The visitors did have chances, but were guilty of a lack of quality at the top end of the pitch, as Fabian Hertzler side fell to a fourth game without a win. It's finished Liverpool 2, Brighton 0.
Time to move into Camogie now and St Finbarr's are full steam ahead for tomorrow's date with Destiny in Croker. Here's St Finbarr's forward Kate Wall speaking to Rory O'Hagan ahead of tomorrow's AIB All-Ireland Camogie Championship Final against Athenry.
Okay, we're delighted to be joined today by St Finbarr's forward Kate Wall. Kate is here with us thanks to AIB, ahead of the AIB Camogie All-Ireland Senior Club Championship Final between Athenry and St Finbarr's this Sunday in Croke Park. Kate, thanks very much for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. I'm good. I'm looking down over Croke Park now, so it's not a bad spot to be in. It's unreal.
You're scouting ahead of Sunday, so.
Yeah, so all excited. Yeah, can't wait.
It's like a cathedral, Croke Park, isn't it? It's just an incredible space to be in.
Ah, yeah, it's unbelievable. I'm just looking down now at the pitch. It's stuff that you dream of as a child, and to play there in a club all Ireland, yeah, it's phenomenal. And we're really, really looking forward to it, and we're really excited.
When you're looking down at the pitch there now, Katie, kind of visualising what it's going to be like running out with the bars on Sunday.
Yeah, I haven't started that yet. Now I'll start doing that in a minute. They can give me another minute, but it's cool to see. It's so quiet, and there's, you know, it's a nice moment, to be honest. I'm really grateful.
I can before the storm for Sunday, so
yeah.
How have the last few weeks been? Like, I'd imagine it's been kind of like a bit of a blur from, like, I suppose the county quarterfinals on.
Yeah, so like, yeah, it's been a whirlwind, really. Like, you know, we had our county final in October. Was it the 12th or the 13th of October? I could be wrong with the dates now. But second week or third week of October, and since then, really, it's been mad. You know, we were preparing for Newcastle West, and we played them in the Bears. And since that game, like, it's just been a whirlwind. Like, it's we beat them in extra time, which was, we've gotten familiar with those extra times, and there was no let up really since then. It's been kind of a week or 2 weeks game. You know, loads of games, and like, geez, playing championship games it's what you want in Camogie. Like, playing these big games, it's the best feeling, really, to have and to be involved in them. So like, it's been a tiring month, definitely, but it's been incredible, and we've really, really enjoyed it. And to be still, you know, to be playing in December, when there's, feels funny going Camogie training when you're hearing Christmas songs on the radio, but it's really special.
Yeah, I've seen the videos of the celebrations kind of up along Bandon Road and back in the clubhouse then. Are you able to take any of that in, or is it just kind of like automatic, is your focus shift to the next game?
Do you know, no, you have to take it in. Like, and I know we had our Munster final there, was it 2 weeks ago, and we'd only a week turnaround. But we still said, like, just, we were in the dressing room, we all had our arms around each other, and we just said, take this in, you know, because, like, these moments don't happen, like, they don't, you know, it can be taken away so quickly. You know, you can lose, you know, there's teams that are excellent and losing the year later. You have to enjoy it when it's happening, and I really feel we've tried to do that. Now, you know, we haven't probably been able to celebrate as much as we'd like to because of the quick turnaround, but small moments in our dressing rooms, in our bus home on after the semi-final, We had a long journey back from Ashbourne, and it was just, we had so much fun, and like you're singing your heart out with your best friends, and it's, you know, you just have so much love for everyone on that bus, and it's they're incredible moments that I know we'll laugh at a lot, and we've such great memories together, you know.
Yeah, talk to me about that squad of players that you have, Kate. I mean, like, it's quite obvious, like, just from watching you play, that there's a tremendous bond between you.
There is, yeah. And like, a lot of people will be gone, there's a lot of sisters, you know, the four Callans and the two Hurleys and there's the Oldens and there's loads of sisters, but they'd be saying, sure, like, all of us, we're just like a big family, really. We'd be fighting with each other like family as well. And we'd be killing each other on the pitch. But then there's such friendship there. And like, when you're playing with your best friends, like, you know, you die for each other on the pitch. And I think that's been really evident in our games. There's been, God, we've been dead and buried so many times, and we've just came out of the trenches together. And I think that's testament. It's incredible. We've an incredible squad. And I was laughing, I was telling someone the other day about, like, you know, how do you not get nervous, or, you know, in those last moments in the semi-final. And Eimear Hurley, she came on and she scored one run. She was incredible. And we were going back into the last 5 minutes of, you know, all Ireland semi-final, last 5 minutes of extra time. And Eimear Hurley goes to me, push the button. You know, she starts singing Push the Button by the Sugar Babes. That's our song. And we all started laughing, and we were like, let's go for it. And like, what will be, you know. And when you've that kind of attitude and those people around you, like, there's no nerves. It's just pure enjoyment. And it's, they're gas.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see. There was a great quote from Stephanie Punch in the Echo recently when she was asked kind of about this being bonus territory. And she shot that down straight away. She said, this isn't bonus territory. We've worked hard enough for this. We deserve this for all the hard work that you've put in over the season. I imagine that's something you go along with.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And like, it hasn't just happened overnight. You know, it hasn't just been the last month that we've decided to put the foot down. This has been going on years. You know, there's been girls that have, you know, probably, you know, everyone sees the success now, but there was many years with no success. And it kind of comes down to that drive for those few years. It doesn't, you know, a good team doesn't happen overnight. It's been a few years of sacrifice, a few years of hard work. And, you know, I think we all realise that we're capable. You know, it's not being cocky. We're confident in our ability. We have a strong team. There's an excellent panel there. Winning Cork is an extremely hard thing to do. There's extremely good teams in Cork. But I think, you know, once we won Cork last year, that was a huge goal of ours. Yeah. But we knew this year we wanted to go further. And like, you can't look ahead of games. You know, you have to focus on what's ahead of you. But we're definitely really eager to progress in the Munster Championship. And we did that, you know. And once you're on a pitch, you know, it's never a bonus. Like, you want to, you want to win. And we're the same. I know it's brilliant to be in Cork Park. It's a brilliant occasion this weekend, but we want to win. And we'll do everything we can to win, you know. And you look back in the year, and, you know, when you do your best, and you'll see, you know, you can be happy. But right now, like, we want to be coming home on Sunday with that cup. And that's all, that's our focus right now.
But to get into the Munster Championship, you had to retain your county championship crown. Mm-hmm. A big target on your backs, obviously, as county champions. Yeah. Did you notice that teams are kind of stepping their games up against you now because they're playing the county champions?
Definitely. And like, it's funny, you go, I think was it Ashton Thompson said before, like, you go from being the hunters to the hunted. And like, that's definitely this year, you know, expectation can, and that can play with players, you know, when people have big expectations for you. Some people are afraid of, you know, probably nerves come in of having these high expectations. But like, to be honest, I just think we didn't have to change anything from last year. It's just small 1%, you know, try and get a little bit more out of yourself. And we met at the start of the year in Rochestown, and we were talking about like our goals for the year, and everyone agreed, like, we just need to back up the county. That was the huge goal. And like, you just have to try and find that little 1% from yourself. It's not rocket science. You don't need to change anything crazy. But we just, and I really, God, we did that in spades. People, everyone stepped up, you know, the commitment, like, you know, even though you wouldn't know how there was more hours in the day, but, you know, definitely just the buy-in is huge. And it's across the squad, you know, there's a really good depth in that squad. And that's kind of what makes a big difference. Mm.
Talk to me a little bit about Munster final day, and I suppose it's an incredible achievement for you to win Munster, your first Munster title. But that game against De La Salle, they're 1-3 up after, I think, 10 minutes. Like, is there a bit of worry creeping in? What changes for you that day?
Yeah, like, obviously we didn't have an ideal start. Like, you'd be lying if you said that it wasn't phased. They start. We knew they were going to be an excellent side. You know, you have to give them respect, and they have excellent players. That everyone in the country has heard of Becca. You know, she's rightly so. She's an amazing player. So yeah, it just took us a bit to get to grips with. But I honestly feel, from having the game the 2 weeks previous against Newcastle and kind of having lost it and being able to find a way back, I didn't fear that we wouldn't be able to get back into the game. I just think, you know, God, we've done this the hard way again, you know. But at halftime, we just came into the dressing room, we had our arms around each other and we just said, like, we're not beat until we're beat. And we've kept that motto going, you know, and we find a way.
No, that's the way. That seems to be the motto of this Paris team this year. You found a way. Like, you scored 2-4 that day. I think your first goal, I think you had half a dozen players around you. You got the shot off and they still went into the net. What a goal that was.
I know, that was funny. I kind of knew I was just going to keep running with the ball because there wasn't probably. And next thing, I was flicking it over one person and I flicked it into the goal. I'll pretend that I knew exactly everything I was doing. It wasn't a rush of blood to the head. But looking back, it looked impressive. But there's a bit of luck involved there probably, but it's an excellent day. You know, I'd be lying if I said it wasn't probably the best for me, but
I think you're downplaying it slightly there now, Kate.
I don't know. The other goal was better, but I'll take whatever goal comes. I won't be saying no if I got a goal like that on Sunday. I wouldn't say no to it.
And speaking of digging deep, then that game against Lochiel, Shamrocks, extra time, they score a goal in extra time and it looks like they're on the way to the All-Ireland final, and somehow again it keeps popping up, he's somehow finding a way to win.
We went down 4 points. Like, if you go down 4 points in extra time, it's probably curtains. But again, we just, after that goal, I think I gave me a quick puck out. I got the puck out. We got it straight up to Orla, or who it was, Kiva, I can't even remember now who got it. But quick, we didn't do anything, man. You know, we didn't just go launching the ball or panicking. We just played the way we played, found our player in place, and got a quick, easy score. And then next thing, you know, it happened again, and Kira Golden got an outrageous score at the end. It was phenomenal. It was brilliant to win it, and like people stepping up, you know, all over the pitch. It's people doing their best and coming up in these moments. And it was brilliant.
Just before we talk about the All-Ireland final, talk to me, I suppose, about Brian O'Sullivan, the management team, the backroom team, and the work that they've put into you to get you to this stage.
I'd say they're sick of us because we'd be wrecking their heads the whole time. But they're amazing, and they give more than just the, you know, we don't even see half of the stuff they give, and they're so passionate and they really, really do everything for us. And they're such a bond. We get on so well with them. I know they'd be slagging us that we'd be annoying them, but like, there's great friendships with them. They all want the best for us. And, you know, they're so kind, you know, like I couldn't, they're so, and generous. Like, we just are so lucky with the management we have. It's, you know, it's a really professional setup. I've been in so many setups. I've been in Cork setups, and like, really, like, the standard doesn't drop with them. They're so professional. And you're never wanted asking for anything, you know. They're excellent, and we've great crack with them as well. And that's what it's all about, you know. Sometimes people can get very serious, and we still have some, you know, we've some laugh with them. And you've Gemma as well, like, involved, who was playing with us, and she's an icon, and having her alongside you on the sideline is really special, and giving you advice because she's been there, done that, and she's so much wealth of experience and knowledge, and we go to her for everything. Annoying her too the whole time.
That's good too. Like, you're in the All-Ireland final obviously on Sunday against the tough Athenry team, and what are you expecting from them this weekend?
They're going to be a savage side, and look, if you're in an All-Ireland final, you have to be doing something right. So like, we know that they're going to come with a huge battle, huge physicality. We know them, we know loads of them, we've played against some of them before, and they're going to be ferocious. And like, look, you know, there'll be probably very little between the two teams on the day, and we'll prepare as best as we can for them. But I suppose you just have to kind of focus on yourself and focus on your own strengths and go from there.
Seems kind of almost odd to me that, like, given the success Cork have had at intercounty level, that this is only the third Cork team to get to the All-Ireland final in the last 30 years. I think I read in the Examiner, I think it was Milford and Inniscarra. So like, it's a huge, huge occasion for you as a club. It's a huge occasion for Cork Camogie as a whole, I guess.
It's huge,
go on, sorry.
No, I think that people probably underestimate how hard it is to win. You know, we won county last year against Sarahs, and we came up to Clonalty and we lost in the first round. And I know Cork is an exceptionally strong club, but winning games in Munster, like, it doesn't matter where you're from, really. They're different. It's a different type of game. There's nothing between the teams. They're really, really hard. So like, you know, it's a really hard thing to do. So like, that's why I think we are really proud that we've gotten this far. It's a huge challenge, and I suppose the fact Cork is such a difficult county to get out of, it does take a lot of energy out of players. It takes a lot out of you to try and to do and like to win Cork. So I suppose sometimes that can be something you need to manage if you want to try and go further.
Just finally for me, Cade, just wrapping up, I suppose, what's the buzz like out in the club? I know there was disappointment for the lads over the weekend against Dingle, but it's an All-Ireland final for you guys. What's the buzz been like out in the bars? And I suppose, what is this run going to do to, I suppose, inspire the next generation of Camogie players in Tokar and beyond?
Yeah, we had a day there a few weeks ago before our Munster final, and the street leagues, the under sixes girls, and I think it was under sixes, eights and nines or whatever, had a big blitz, and they walked out with us, and like to see the look in their eyes, you know, one of their moms said like, you're their heroes. And I think it's really inspiring, because to know club players, like sometimes it's not just your inter-county team, like there's people in your club that there's loads of young girls look up to within their club, and I think you can be huge role models and huge ambassadors for younger girls, and that you don't have to be playing inter-county to get to these big games. You can do it playing with your club, and you can play in Croke Park with your club. It's a huge dream to have as a child, and like, you know, I think it's the club is buzzing. Yeah, we're, look, obviously the boys, a huge disappointment and new heartbreak for them, but it will use it again to drive us on further, and we're all really excited. Yeah, and we're ready.
Okay, and I'm going to be cheering you on from home this weekend. I'll be on my feet cheering for the Bars this weekend. I'd imagine everyone from Cork is going to be cheering you on as well. Yeah. Very, very best of luck to you from everyone here at Red FM, and go and bring it home for us this weekend.
Thanks a million.
And sticking with that one, Stephanie Punch spoke to Off the Ball during the week.
And Stephanie Punch is the captain and cornerback for Finbars, who I'm delighted to say is with us on the line. Evening, Stephanie. Appreciate you taking the call.
Hi, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So this is a first ever All-Ireland final for the club. I presume training this week feels bigger, feels more special. Everything just feels that touch more important.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been on an incredible journey the last couple of weeks. I suppose this week there's a huge, huge buzz around the club, as you said, like a first kind of Camogie All-Ireland appearance. So everyone's really just taking in their stride and just, you know, everyone's wishing us luck, and there's a huge buzz. Everyone's really excited for us. So no, we're looking forward to it.
Have you managed to enjoy this year a little bit more, given, I guess, the long drought without a county title was finally ended in 2024? And maybe there was a sense of pressure with that, whereas once that monkey was off the back, 2025 was possibly a bit more enjoyable?
Yeah, I think 2024, and I suppose the couple of years before it, we were kind of knocking on the door, so there was a lot of pressure there kind of for us. So when we finally won in 2024, like, it was almost just a sense of relief, kind of, as you said, like, you know, that we finally kind of bridged that gap. So look, we enjoyed it, and we went straight into Munster a week or two later. So look, you had to enjoy those days, because, you know, bridging a gap like that is incredible, and it was incredible for the club. So we had a good few days celebration. We probably didn't give Munster kind of our all last year. So no, when we met again kind of this year, we definitely, you know, we wanted more for ourselves.
So what are we talking here? How did you curb the celebrations this year? Was it like a full week celebrations cut down to two or three, or what was the situation?
Yeah, we cut it down by a couple of days at least. Right. Now we kind of knew, although we kind of had a few weeks, I suppose, leading to a semi-final, you know, we kind of knew that we needed to get kind of back on the horse kind of quick enough. No, so we enjoyed the couple of days, but no, we definitely cut it down to one or two days this year.
We'll talk about the season in just a sec, because it's been an absolutely crazy path to the final since the county title. But just give us a bit of the backstory here. So for people who aren't aware, 2006 was your last county title until 2024, which seems like a huge amount of time for a club the size of St. Finbars. Was it seen as a bit of an anomaly within Cork Camogie that Finbars had gone so long without a Camogie title, or was it just one of those things where maybe there was kind of a bit of a doldrum scenario with regards to the players that were available and other clubs that had sprung up? But what was the situation there for the best part of two decades?
Yeah, I suppose 2006 is actually the first title that we won as well. So, you know, we're only on three titles now with the last 2 years. So, like, the team were fantastic in 2006. But I think kind of the years following, it was definitely maybe a team in transition. You know, even when I came on the scene, I've been on the team now for about 10 years. We were still kind of in that transition period for a good number of years. So, you know, although we knew that there were players coming, you know, the likes of Kevin McCarthy and kind of the Nicole Olden and the likes, we knew they were coming, but, you know, we just had to, I suppose, wait for them to kind of mature and for the team to kind of mature itself. We've had a few girls kind of transfer in then as well. And it's really just, you know, in the last couple of years, we've been kind of fighting to get to that final slot and finally got there in 2024 and kind of bridged that gap, as we said.
Okay, so I hadn't realised that 2006 was the first title for St. Finbars, because I guess maybe we attach it to the sort of status of the club when it comes to men's football and to hurling as well. But Camogie's caught up and is catching up at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, even 2006, you know, we had Gemma O'Connor and Linda O'Connell, and like they were still with us, you know, when we won last year. So it, look, it's incredible that they were still involved. But no, I think in the last couple of years, you know, there's been so much attention kind of given to Camogie. You know, we don't want for anything in the club either. You know, we definitely are seen as kind of equals with regards to the hurling and football. So it's been fantastic, you know, and you know, that interest and that in us has really helped us to kind of grow the team in the last couple of years.
Gemma's still involved, if I'm not mistaken.
Gemma's a selector on the team now, yeah. So she kind of finished up playing with us last year. She came in, we had a good number of injuries, you know, in the backs last year. So she kind of came in and she kind of helped us out there. And you know, she was fantastic in the county final. But no, she kind of hung up the boots last year and she's involved as a selector now. And look, her experience is invaluable. She definitely pucks every ball with us, as you could have seen in the Munster final, yeah. So she probably wishes she was out there now, but no, she's incredible.
And Gemma O'Connor as a selector, is she very hands off, or is she getting involved in the end of training games and stuff like that?
She's a bit more hands off, I suppose. You know, it's her eye for the game, you know, is incredible. So, you know, she'll kind of watch and then she'll kind of come in and she'll kind of like give us a few messages. But look, she's done it all. She's been there, you know, her experience is invaluable to the team. So, you know, we're very, very grateful that she's still involved.
So talk to us about this year then, after you won the Cork title again and made it back-to-back titles, you're a third in history. You have this extraordinary Munster semi-final against Newcastle West, where you beat them after extra time. So what was it, four periods of extra time in the end, but it goes to extra time a second time. Talk us through the madness of what happens after full time there.
Yeah, I suppose, you know, you're probably guilty of thinking that we had won it in full time. I suppose, you know, what this year's taught me, if anything, you know, is it's not over till it's over. So, you know, we went through two hectic periods of extra time in that game. And when the final whistle blew, it was just, again, a sense of relief. You know, we had it out in the club and, you know, to see everyone that you've grown up playing with, you know, all the club members out there supporting us, we kind of felt a duty to kind of do it for them as well. So going off the field to, you know, a huge crowd congratulating us was just incredible. It was something I've never experienced before, and that's definitely, I suppose, a turning point for us, that game, you know, that kind of gave us the belief that we could go on and we could, you know, go further than we could before.
So what happened in normal time there? But it sounds like things, you were up by a decent amount and let them back into it?
We were up by two goals and yeah, I suppose Newcastle West kind of came back at us and I think they scored 2-1 within kind of the couple of minutes before full time. So yeah, it was, look, I suppose, as I said, like, it's not over till it's over. So you can't think just because you have a lead of 6 points that you have it won, you know. So they came back at us and we were probably lucky to kind of be still there in extra time, and we kind of pulled it back and we really, really, you know, went at it in extra time, and we kind of came away with it, which was fantastic.
That's a real testament to the team that you are then, because you'd often back the team that have come roaring back into it in a comeback situation, and when it ends in a draw, you back them to win an extra time. So for you to actually prevail after their comeback says a lot about your mentality.
Yeah, and I think the last couple of years, you know, we've put huge focus into kind of the S&C part of our game. You know, Dylan Byrne, our S&C, you know, he has us in peak condition, you know, so we knew that we had the legs to kind of finish out extra time. So sometimes, you know, the mind might go more than the legs, but, you know, we just kept going, kept at it, and look, we just knew our forwards would come good, and that's what they did.
You win the Munster final against De La Salle and you get your Munster crown on that day, but then the All-Ireland semi-final against Lochiel. It's extra time again. So talk to us about this one.
Yeah, it's kind of deja vu, I suppose. You know, I didn't think I'd see another 90 minutes in my career. But I suppose it was two fantastic teams just going at it hard. And, you know, it was point for point. And, you know, again, we were probably one up at the end of kind of normal time, and you know, they came back into it, and look, we had that experience. We went through the Newcastle game and we kind of regrouped and we just said it again, look, we've been here before, we know what needs to be done. Again, like, we were, I think, two down towards the end of extra time, and you know, sometimes I feel like in Camogie it might take that bit longer to actually get a score, but we got two fantastic scores within the last 3 minutes there. And Ciara Golden, who scored our winner, you know, half back, you know, sometimes, you know, you wouldn't expect your half back to actually come up and get that winner, but she did. And you know, it was incredible composure to actually, you know, put that ball over the bar and send us into a final.
The S&C point, as you've mentioned there, and the great work done by your coach, obviously comes to fruition, but I presume the fitness kind of increases from being out there for 90 minutes, and you must feel unbelievably confident about the shape that you're in, having to go to 90 minutes on two separate occasions in this campaign.
Yeah, definitely. I think we were only talking there that we've kind of gone through nearly an extra game at this time with all the extra time that we've actually done. So it does, like, it does kind of, it brings you along. And, you know, these games we're hoping, you know, will definitely stand to us, like the Newcastle game stood to us in the De La Salle game. And, you know, we're hoping the Lochiel game, you know, everything that we went through there will kind of stand to us in the final as well.
So was the SNC regime at the start of the season absolutely brutal? Did he do something different at the start of 2025?
2024 is actually where it kind of started for us. Right. Dylan came in and I'd say we were out training in the bog and it was brutal. You know, we were kind of used to it when it came along to pre-season this year. But, you know, I think, you know, we do running kind of every session, you know, we're always tipping away at it. So, you know, it's tough going now. And I'd say we complain more often than not. He's probably sick of listening to us, but it's invaluable. And, you know, it's something that's definitely, you know, why we're here, where we are today.
When you say out training in the bog, do you mean that literally or do you mean a waterlogged pitch?
A waterlogged pitch, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking that would be quite the way to go.
No, he's not that cruel.
Yeah. Has there been anything different? Like, I mean, we often hear from the intercounty teams that they get brought on these kind of mad army training camps almost to try and increase the fitness. Have you gone down different paths at all over the past couple of seasons to try and, not even to find an extra level of fitness, but in terms of team bonding and trying to bring you closer together as a group?
I think we would have done, like, we've done the army camps and stuff like that years and years ago. But, you know, I think more for anything for us, it's about just being together. It doesn't matter, I suppose, where we are or where we do that kind of bonding or that those running sessions. So we've not done anything too mad. We've just focused on ourselves. You know, that's kind of what we've done the last couple of years. I think sometimes you can get so caught up in, you know, what everyone else is doing. So we've just kind of kept to ourselves, kept tipping away at it. And, you know, it's brought us on strides.
Do you prepare in a different way now that you're looking at Croke Park? Because like, certainly when it comes to shooting into the goals, a lot of shooters just say in any of the Gaelic Games codes that it is just a different animal going to Croker. Other than that, is there anything else that you need to do to prepare for I guess a different stage this weekend?
I suppose we're lucky that we have a lot of girls and our management team with experience in Croke Park. So obviously we have a lot of girls involved with Cork Seniors and the Cork 23s. So, you know, they're quick to give us advice, you know, on it. You know, they're well used to it themselves. I think, you know, even, you know, we were playing in Thurles and it was new to us again. But again, look, it's just another game for us. We're trying not to, I suppose, let the occasion kind of overshadow the actual game. So we've not done anything too different, really. Again, we're just focusing on ourselves. You know, training's not been too different the last couple of weeks. I think, you know, the more you normalise these things, you know, the more that they don't kind of get bigger than they are.
Yeah, for sure. At the same time, I'm sure you're all trying to soak this in and trying to enjoy this week, right? Because it is a special moment playing an All-Ireland final for your club in Croke Park. I think that just adds a special nature to it. The inter-county finals in Croke Park are undoubtedly special, but a club final in Croke Park is an unbelievably special occasion. So how do you soak that in while also trying to stick to the process of a week like this?
Yeah, I suppose it's been a fantastic few weeks for the club. And, you know, we just, I suppose, launched our 150-year book. So it's been, you know, we've been kind of going through the nostalgia and stuff like that. So that's all kind of like led into kind of the build up to the game. You know, we've had kind of past players kind of, you know, giving us advice and things like that. I suppose sometimes you can kind of be too focused on the game as well and not be let yourself enjoy this. But as you said, like, it's, you know, it's could be a once in a lifetime kind of thing. You know, it's very hard to get out of Cork, you know, the Cork Camogie Championship, never mind coming out of Munster as well with all those fantastic teams. So we're definitely letting ourselves enjoy the build up, and you know, these kind of couple of days now we'll just wind down and look forward to Sunday.
And how much have you tapped into the season that St Finbarr's have had? Obviously brilliant on the hurling and football side of things, and particularly on like that game last week from the footballers was extraordinary. It ultimately ends in defeat, so I'm not sure how much you tap into the highs and also into the lows of the wider St Finbarr's universe this season.
Yeah, I suppose it's really started, I think, since 2018 when the kind of footballers bridged that huge gap as well and winning the kind of Cork Championship and then the hurlers in 2022. And like, we took huge inspiration from all of their wins. I suppose when you see everyone kind of making history in the club, you want to make your own history and be part of it as well. So it definitely spurred us on. And I suppose it's been a successful year for the club as well. You know, it's been great kind of going along with the footballers and, you know, their success as well. Obviously, it was a huge disappointment last week, you know, but we're nothing but proud of them. And look, they've they've all been so great to us and with giving us, you know, good luck messages. So, you know, it's, there was a huge buzz around the club and there still is.
Yeah, I mean, we've been mentioning this interview quite a bit this week, but Jimmy Barry Murphy talking to Tommy Rooney in the aftermath of the Dingle game last week. Unbelievably magnanimous, first of all. I think any ordinary human being would have been understandably angry with what happened last Sunday in Thurles. But he was magnanimous and he also found the presence of mind to say, actually, the St. Finbar season's not over yet. The Camogie team are out next week in Croke Park. That's an incredible presence of mind from JBM.
Absolutely. You know, I was up at the game myself and, you know, hugely disappointed. But, you know, that's just who the man he is. You know, he's incredibly gracious and, you know, to give us that shout out in the end, you know, gave us a huge boost as well. You know, we know him well and, you know, he knows all the girls as well. So, you know, they're correct. You know, the season's not over. And, look, we hope to just, I suppose, bring a bit of buzz back to the club after the last couple of weeks.
So what did the next 72 hours look like then, Stephanie? Do you have another training session before Sunday? And when do you travel up to Dublin?
Yeah, so our last training session is tomorrow night, so we'll probably just do something light and kind of get food afterwards in the bar. We're actually travelling up to Dublin Sunday morning, so right. We'll head up on the train. I think, you know, you think about going up the night before, but then you have to fill your whole kind of morning the next day. So I think, you know, again, we're just kind of going to stick to our own routine, you know, sleep in your own bed kind of Saturday night and have breakfast the Sunday morning and then head up.
Yeah, exactly. 4:15 game as well, so nice and late in the day. Listen, Stephanie, very best of luck on Sunday. Hopefully it's an enjoyable experience as well as everything else, and appreciate you coming on the show this evening.
Brilliant stuff, and best of luck to the Bears tomorrow in GAHQ. And the latest from Munster's clash down the park is 12-3 in Munster's favour. That's all we have time for here on the Big Red Bench. Thank you for joining me, Dan Casey, signing off. But Marty Guilfoyle is on the way next. The Big Red Bench.